855-855 is the phone number. Welcome. Hour three of your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew coming up in just over 30 minutes. Bob Paduchik, the RNC co-chair, we're going to talk a little bit about the looming possibility of a shutdown and how it's a little less likely as the Senate appears to be closing in on
a budget shutdown.
Agreement. Boo. No, I mean, if they get a budget agreement passed, that's a good thing.
No, even if they got that bad, they want to shut down. I just want to be irrational for a minute. That's all. I was just being honest. Well,
why not? Everybody else.
I just want to know what it feels like for a little while to be that irrational.
Also, we need to spend some time a little bit later this hour on the latest text messages that have been released
between
Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. It's some pretty. It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
We spent some time talking about the University of Minnesota moving this Ben Shapiro speech around to try to accommodate or mitigate the violent leftist protesters that they are expecting. We've got Dave in Santiago wants to comment on that. Good morning, Dave. Go ahead.
Good morning. Yes, and by the way, I was one of the caucus coordinators last night with my 17-year-old son because he will be 18 in fall.
Cool.
Now, here's a question for you. I'm not trying to be an overly protective parent. My son, who's 17, going to be 18 in fall, he wants to go to that event. And I'm less than thrilled about, I know who Ben Shapiro is, and I think he's got a great message, but I'm less than thrilled about sending a kid into St. Paul to go see that speaker when you know there's going to be problems.
Yeah.
What do you do? You know, you got to... He's got to get used to, you know, this is the risk factor involved.
Yeah.
Got to be a conservative.
Well, I will say that at least it seems like for right now, and thanks for the call, Dave, because I was thinking about this when we were working through the story. When you look at these organizations, it appears, you know, this is the Pioneer Press doing a story on these student groups and the fact that they've had to move around and that there's not a lot that these conservative or libertarian-leaning groups can do about the university moving their venues, okay? They're kind of powerless, and they have to just kind of, you know, take what they can get. I like the fact that they're out there and they're speaking out about what's really happening, because that's about all that they can do. I agree with you. I do. There's a part of me that actually thinks and is actually glad, for what it's worth, that you have the university doing this, because it does go and show the blatant bias that's there. Because I don't care about the excuses. Because the university should be allowing the students to go and have these speakers where they want to have them. And then the university should then step in and take care of the protesting that takes place through no fault of those student organizations' own. But they don't do that. They are making decisions based off fear. And when you make decisions based off fear, 9 times out of 10, you're making the wrong decision. And they're making the wrong decision here. So the student organizations are doing what they need to do to expose the bias that's actually going on. I don't think, and Drew, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to probably say you're going to agree, it's not changing anytime soon. So all you can do is just expose the bias and keep working towards hopefully a place where this does change, where those that go and protest and would be violent would actually be held accountable for their actions,
right,
to where they would go and change their tactics and just be normal protesters who go out and express their right to free speech and not ones that go out of their way to get violent and get arrested.
The problem is, and I agree with you, I don't see any real change of culture on the horizon. The reason for that is because it's worked. They've gotten the results that they're going for. Their goal is to silence conservative speech, to make conservatives afraid to engage and to have these discussions, right, and have these conversations, and afraid to attend these conversations and these discussions, and universities afraid to host these discussions. And that's exactly what we're seeing happen at the University of Minnesota. Their tactics have been effective, and they've been effective because there hasn't been harsh accountability. You cannot counter a speech with violence and call it a protest and call it protected by the First Amendment. If you want to show up and hold some signs you know, but don't obstruct people's ability to enter and participate, not try to silence the speaker, not use aggression. And even if that aggression is in the form of shouting down conservative speakers and disrupting the event to where it can no longer take place, those are forms of aggression. If you want to protest, you, as long as you don't cross that line of using a form of aggression to try to silence voices you disagree with, then fine. You're protected under the First Amendment, just like Ben Shapiro is, just like these conservative groups are. The problem is, though, they have used aggression to silence it, and they have not been held accountable.
Well, and if you're a libertarian, if you're a conservative, and you're doing it, and you're doing it right, okay? If you're a libertarian or conservative and you're being a libertarian, or you are a conservative and you're doing it right, all things being relative, it's not an easy task. And the reason why it's not an easy task is because on the left, you are essentially encouraged and allowed to be as irrational and as hypocritical as you want to be to get your point across. Right? And to me, that's because you have a lack of ideas on the left and a lack of courage to go and actually push forward what you really believe. So it's much easier to be irrational and justify it by saying that, well, we've got to get it out there so it doesn't matter, so I can be as hypocritical as I want. And I say that because there's people online, people on Twitter that are saying, oh, you know, Ben Shapiro doesn't talk. All he does is name call. Okay, well, why are you saying that? Well, you're saying that because you are in your little quasi behind a moniker, not putting your name out into the world because you're hiding behind it on Twitter, saying that it's justified what the university is doing. Yeah. When it's not. Because he doesn't really talk. He just name calls. So in my mind, I'm going to put out there this little comment to say, I'm okay that they're going to go ahead and put them in smaller venues. You know, I'd like to believe that as conservatives and libertarians, you try to engage better. You try to be rational. You try to think through the problem. But it's really, really difficult to counter that when you've got the other side that is willing to be as irrational and as hypocritical as they feel to stress their point and to move forward their agenda.
And this is one of those instances where, you know, a lot of times you can sit here and say, you know, the same thing happens on the right, happens on the left. This doesn't happen. You don't see liberal speakers getting shouted down and aggressive tactics being used to silence liberal speakers on college campuses. This is an area where the left kind of has a bit of a monopoly on the stupid. Don in Brooklyn Center, go ahead.
Yeah, good conversation, guys. Just wanted to comment, and I agree that, you know, hopefully change starts happening, but I don't believe change is going to happen when you have the police chief giving out hand warmers
right
to protesters to help them protest.
Right. Right. No, you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. There is so much catering that happens under the guise of what people call free speech that it perpetuates the problem. If you're breaking the law, you're breaking the law. You have free speech, but we also have laws. Right. So you can exercise your right to free speech, right, and you can also break the law at the same time.
Free speech, you are not exercising your First Amendment rights. You are not exercising your free speech when you start to use aggression, when you start to use tactics that silence and obstruct other people's abilities to engage in their First Amendment rights.
There was this is a flyer. It was posted on Twitter last night, a Star Tribune reporter. You can go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. And go to the Justice and Drew page. You can take a look at it for yourself. It's got the big Trump, you know, block logo, the Trump Make America Great Again. And then underneath it, it's typed out, okay, Dear Immigrant-Scums, the purpose of this letter is to inform you that our newly formed MEGA, MEGA-MN, organization, they spelled organization. They just dropped some letters in the organization would like to give a notice that we will not tolerate any
infiltration. Yeah, let's read this exactly as it's written.
I'm trying.
Not tolerate any infiltration
right
from Sharia loving Muslim at our prescient caucus In the past, you barbaric, also misspelled, Muslims couldn't even conduct yourself in a civil matter.
C-I-V-I-A-L.
Yeah, and matter instead of manner. These people... Clearly, your forms of politics has led your country to a blank hole state, but this is America, and we will not stand for you Muslims bastard. We will be there watching, and we'll take the necessary, also misspelled.
Okay, that being, that's a really difficult word to spell.
Necessary steps to defend our American values. Sincerely, also misspelled, you neighborhood infidel.
There's no way this is real.
This was clearly some idea that some low-level DFL activist had, wanted to make sure it got in the hands of someone from the Star Tribune or some reporter, and they did, and it got spread out. And this is ridiculous.
But you tweeted the right thing, though. People will take this seriously.
Yeah.
I can't see.
People have.
It's so blatantly written bad that I can't tell if the person wrote it so bad because they wanted everybody to know it was a parody. Or if the person actually sat down and thought, I know how I'll make this legit. I'll put a bunch of spelling errors in it to go ahead and make it seem like somebody really went and wrote it. And this speaks to me, at least. This is a really, really good example of how we need to stop giving attention to this type of nonsense. Right? We really do. When there isn't any
I'm torn on that because
when there isn't any direct harm done to anybody and it's just a flyer or just something that's posted, just take it down. When it's something that's written on, just get rid of it, because if there's no way to know who actually did it, then there's no way to really add any commentary to it.
Right. Well, that begins with reporters and journalists ignoring it. Once they don't ignore it, I do feel like there needs to be some response. It does need to be called out for the obvious, poorly constructed hoax and BS that it is. Because without that pushback, a lot of people are going to believe it. When they see a journalist, and this was tweeted out by J. Patrick Hulikin from the Star Tribune, when they see a journalist tweet this out, I think a lot of people will accept it at face value.
Well,
I don't like not at least making an effort of pointing out that there's no way that this is real.
I'd rather see sort of let me just say for the record, this is me over here on my fantasy island. I know this is not going to happen. I'm just putting it out there. I'd rather see more of a larger commitment to not giving coverage to this nonsense of notes and flyers and things like this, when it's clear you're not going to be able to get at the heart of who ended up writing it. It should just be ignored because it is going to be perpetuated. Because for as much as we'll go and call out how this is so intentionally a hoax, other individuals will go and perpetuate it regardless and say it's real, regardless of what we say. It shouldn't be given any... Now, granted, this was not in defense of the Star Tribune so far. This was not a Star Tribune article. This was simply a reporter who put a photo on Twitter, right, which is in drastically different than actually writing an article about it. So in this case, that hasn't happened.
Correct, but a lot of people follow that reporter, and a lot of people follow him because they know he's a reporter and they know he's a journalist. And I don't know how many people differentiate between seeing an article in the paper or seeing a journalist from that paper tweet something. It might be a lot of people, but I don't know. And it would concern me that my reaction to it is to push back. My reaction to it is to say, that's fake, that's false, that's clearly a hoax. Try to let as many people as possible know that this is ridiculous.
Sure, and I agree with that. You know, for J. Patrick, if it becomes an article, then I've got a different set of commentary.
It would
commentary.
Be one thing if J. Patrick Hulikin tweeted it out with the caveat of no verification on where this came from or if it's actually real, but this is what some people have found at this particular location. But he didn't. He just tweeted it out saying, you know, a DFL staffer found this at a caucus location.
Yep, that was it. If you want to see it for yourself, go to the website, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
That was close.
Justice and Drew Page. Oh, if close is missing the trash going into the basket. you were in the general vicinity and it not going in as close.
I wish you guys could all see John's disapproving look.
Yes, that was close.
Every time. That
yeah, on numerous levels. I'm in the middle of the next transition and suddenly paper goes flying across the room.
Like, could you have made it from across the room, John?
I'm not trying to make baskets in the middle of showtime. that's the fundamental difference between the two of us.
Hold on, I'll get it right
this time. And our behavior.
I'm gonna do one too.
You're in the booth next door.
And I still have a trash can on
it's
the
like,
other side
it's
of the
like you're both
I made it!
Spitting on my professionalism. You know,
I'm like an NBA star.
I'm over here trying to, you know, what, you know, whatever.
Bob Paducek from the RNC joining us in about 20 minutes from now. Next, I do want to get into this story that broke over the course of the show here. The latest text messages from the FBI lovers. That and more coming up on Justice and Drew.
You know, sometimes. Boy, on Twitter, hashtag TCNT, people have lost their minds. I know that's a general. I mean, you can make that at any point throughout the day, 24 hours a day. I get that, but just currently under the hashtag TCNT, if you're not on Twitter, it's people just making stuff up. People just making up. They're just making up complaints to try to justify their rationale for having a different take on what we're talking about on the air.
It's all in response to the Ben Shapiro conversation we were having at the U of M. And again, it goes back to this idea, and this seems to be, maybe not exclusively, but sure, the left sure does do it a lot. They equate words with violence.
Right.
They take people's words and consider them assault, and in that vein, it justifies using aggression to silence words.
Yeah.
Because they feel like the words, they just bother them so much that's equivalent to a physical assault. It's not. And stop reacting that way.
Is it a generational thing? Like, Sam, because you would have been closer to this time than us, so maybe it's a generational thing. When you were growing up, when you were younger, did you have any occurrences where people were tossing, like, the letter blocks at your face or something? Disciplinary action? Are there kids that are going through, like, daycares and they're getting words thrown at them when they're misbehaving? Did you experience it? Have you been assaulted by letters at all when you were younger? Is what I'm trying to ask.
Not that I remember.
Have words assaulted you? Have you been physically accosted
by words?
Physically by words. Right. Not emotionally. Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay. I mean, I know what it's like to be
all that happening.
I don't recall being attacked by physical words.
I know what it's like to be emotionally accosted by words, right? Because
hello.
I know it. But you know what? That does drive at the heart of it. And this is when you circle back around, my jokey jokes actually do land somewhere. And the point being that when people have their, on the left especially, have their emotions played with, they equate that to a physical thing happening to them, and therefore the thing that's causing them that physical reaction is now harmful. So in this case, when words have an emotional impact on them, that's why they equate it to something that they feel like they can fight back on a physical level.
I guess.
That's got to be what it is.
Well, they need to stop.
I know they need to stop. they need to find an outlet.
Cool out.
Get a punching bag, you know, just get something.
Just get a hobby.
Seriously.
Get a pet. Anything.
Take up kickboxing.
No, don't give him pets.
Don't punish the puppies and
or
kitties
maybe
out
just
there.
Grow a thick enough skin to realize that just because your emotions have been affected in some way, shape, or form, it doesn't mean that you've been assaulted.
Other people are not responsible for your emotional reaction. You are.
Right.
You control that, and you get to choose. You don't necessarily get to choose your emotional reaction, but you get to choose how you act upon that. You get to choose what you do with that emotional reaction. And you can't go through life, and you can't go through the world expecting everybody else and every institution to accommodate your sensibilities.
Right.
To accommodate your sensitivities. And that's the one of the biggest concerns I have with this generation that's coming up right now, is that they expect the rest of the world to accommodate them. Whatever decision they have made in life, whatever gender they've decided to identify with, everybody else has to accommodate whatever their whim and whatever their sensitivities and sensibilities are. That's not how the world works. You figure out who you are. You be whoever the hell you want to be, man. I don't care.
Right. My name's Paul Between Y'all.
You gotta figure out how to navigate the world. Not expect the word. Not expect the Red Sea to part for you.
Well, and we'll get. And I know we want to get to the text, but just real quick, and we don't have to go through the story. But there's a story here out of Fox News. Social justice activists at a New York high school successfully shut down a production of The Hunchback of Notre Dame after a white student landed a lead role. Look, it's on the people who got offended by that person being cast. It's not that person being cast, right? The same thing happened yesterday when they announced that the two showrunners and writers, Wise, and I can't remember the other guy's name, the two guys that write and are the showrunners for Game of Thrones, yeah, are going to be making Star Wars movies. I can tell you exactly why this outrage occurred. Because when Star Wars put out the YouTube video, it had breaking news and it had the pictures of two white men saying that they were going to direct the new Star Wars movie.
That's it. That's all it took.
And it was enough to trigger a bunch of people who are now all upset because a woman or a person of color hasn't been tapped to write a Star Wars movie yet. That's on you. You are making that decision to go and get offended. Right. Star Wars is not assaulting you. Neither is Disney or Lucasfilm. Neither is this production, because the role of Esmeralda went to an individual who you particularly didn't want to see in that role. You know what? Don't go watch the play. Don't go watch the movie.
Right. Yeah. Vote with your feet. Vote with your dollars. Don't expect everybody else to change their behavior based on what you think should be happening.
Just because your emotions get played with doesn't mean that you've been physically assaulted. You're allowing your emotions to get played with. You are making a choice to be offended.
Yeah.
And people, you can choose how you feel about things, and especially, you can definitely choose how you react.
Right.
To things.
And that's the key. That's the key. Yeah. I mean, some emotional responses are sort of instinctive, and and they're, you know, they're going to happen, and you can't always control it, but you can control how you handle that and the choices that you make going forward based on that emotional reaction.
I have living proof of that.
You're a walking ball of emotion.
I am a walking ball of emotion.
John, he could choose to cry every time I insult him.
I could.
But he doesn't.
And I have grown. I am so much better at dealing with it than I was within the first months of the show. I can I like to feel like I can just about totally handle it now.
Most days.
It's been a long time since I've gotten upset by anything that you've said to me. I feel like I'm growing as a person.
Or she needs to up her game.
Yeah, or I'm just getting lazy.
Or I've just really, really done myself a disservice.
I definitely need to step up my game.
Gosh, darn it. Why do I do that?
I think I've gone soft on you.
Why did I do that?
I got my popcorn out for the next few days here. Why? I see Sam in there thinking, challenge accepted.
I know. Hey,
I love a good challenge.
Why? I just do it.
Bob Panucci, RNC co-chair, is going to be joining us shortly. I do want to spend a few minutes with him and get his thoughts on this story that just broke earlier this morning. Newly revealed text messages between FBI paramours, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. Yeah, they were paramours.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I like that band.
Hayley Williams is a visionary.
The new video is fantastic. It really, really is. Watched it yesterday, actually.
I have not seen it yet.
These new text messages include an exchange about preparing talking points for then FBI Director James Comey to give to President Obama, who wanted, quote, to know everything we're doing. The message from Page to Strzok was among thousands of texts between the lovers reviewed by Fox News. The pair both worked at one point for Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe of the collusion with Trump and Russia. Page wrote to Strzok on September 2nd, 2016, okay, about prepping Comey because, quote, POTUS wants to know everything we're doing. According to a newly released Senate report, this text raises questions about Obama's personal involvement in the Clinton email investigation. Is there any reason to think that he wasn't?
No, of course not.
Honestly?
Of course not.
You just put normal, normal human being behavior with political agendas and,
right.
you know, into play here. Of course he was.
And you add in the fact that he's a progressive and everything that we've just been talking about, it's not surprising. It's not surprising at all.
In texts previously revealed, Strzok and Page had shown their disdain for Republicans in general, as well as Trump calling him a blinking idiot, among other insults. Among the newly disclosed texts, Strzok calls Virginians who voted against then FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe's wife for a Senate seat, quote, ignorant hillbillies.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's really pleasant. You know, it is the fact that the majority of those on the left haven't realized the disservice they've done to their own cause. Now, granted, I think it's worth noting that President Donald Trump hasn't really done anything controversial as of late. Okay. He hasn't. It's been a couple of weeks now. Okay. That being said, he's done plenty of controversial things. Said things, alleged statements, even things in his past that those on the left or the anti-Trumpers could easily go and try to use against him. And yet, all we've seen is an irrational freak out over him that does a disservice to their cause. And when this stuff gets exposed, it continues to add right. to that irrational freak out.
And this is where you start piecing these texts together, and it creates kind of a nefarious picture of you know, this resistance to Trump from within the FBI. Okay, so you got texts. This is part of the just released a batch. On Election Day, Page wrote, all caps, OMG, this is blanking terrifying. Okay?
Okay.
Strzok, her lover, replied, OMG, I am so depressed. Later that month, on November 13th.
OMG.
Okay, so that was Election Day. On November 13th, Page wrote, texted, I bought all the president's men. Figure I need to brush up on Watergate. Now remember, previously they had talked about an insurance policy.
Right.
Right?
Right.
The next day, Page wrote, apparently she was in some sort of meeting, God, being here makes me angry. Lots of highfalutin national security talk. Meanwhile, we have our task ahead of us. That sounds very sinister.
It does sound very sinister. Your task of dealing with your depression, or was this something a little bit more than that?
Right. Page's meaning here is unclear, but Senate investigators say coupled with the previous texts about insurance policies, further investigation is warranted to find out what actions the two have may taken. The last text is from Page to Strzok, comes on June 23rd, 2017, when she wrote, please don't ever text me again. Clearly, he did.
You know, I still find it really interesting when you hear responses from individuals from Election Day and those that didn't want to see Trump get elected, and just how you can talk about that emotion again, right? And this goes back to what we were talking about. So many of them were so depressed and emotionally distraught. This goes back to the justification and rationale of the pushback that we've seen since he was elected, right? The justification for the leaking that's taken place under the Trump administration. I don't doubt that all of these types of actions haven't taken place in other elections. It's just so many people felt justified in putting the information out there and leaking stuff on Trump because of how emotionally distraught they were. I can say, and I know, believe me, not believe me, Drew was there. Look, when Obama was first elected, I was bummed.
Yeah.
I was not depressed. I went about my day because right. I have half a brain to know the world was not going to come to an end. For as much as I did not want to see him become president, for the most part, my life wouldn't be all that affected
yeah.
by it all that much. I was like, it sucks.
To be fair, we didn't go into that election with the degree of confidence that Hillary Clinton and her supporters went into this past one.
True.
They were so certain.
Well, you know.
They were so certain. We went into that McCain election going, yeah, Obama's probably going to win.
Did you see? Well, hold on.
It didn't come as a big shock.
Did you see my car that was parked in the parking lot?
That's yeah. true. Yeah. You did have the McCain-Palin mobile.
Yeah. I need to find a photo of that. It really was a piece of art.
Talk about irrational.
Yeah. Somebody stole a campaign sign from my yard and I got so upset. I had my 94 Honda Accord completely decked out as a McCain Palin banner.
That just seems like something that you
I'll
would
have
do.
To, you know what? I'll try That's to, before awesome. We talk to Bob Paducha coming up, I'll try to have to go and find it because it really was an amazing looking automobile.
That's so, you're so extra.
Coming up next, RNC co-chair Bob Paducha.
Justice.
Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice Andrew, along with Sam, 651-989-5855. Use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter if you're brave enough currently. Things are a little nutty right now on Twitter.
Despite President Trump apparently saying, I'd love to see a shutdown if lawmakers can't reach an immigration deal, we do appear to have that possibility of a shutdown does appear to be less likely as the Senate is closing in on a budget agreement. Joining us now, RNC co-chair Bob Paducek. Good morning, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Great to
have you on. I'm sure you've been watching this story. What's your degree of confidence going forward? We've got the House passing a measure. The Senate appears to be something that they could possibly pass. Do you think we're going to be looking at another shutdown, or might we actually get a budget?
I think the Democrats don't have the stomach for another shutdown here after getting blamed and suffering the debacle of the one last time around. And so for me, I just don't think they're there. And what I think President Trump is doing is he's rightfully calling the Democrats out on these issues, because what we see time and time again that the Democrats would rather sacrifice a successful public policy for, you know, political talking points and a wedge issue that gives them an opportunity to score points.
Tend to agree, Bob, but in doing so, that also forces one to assume that they're going to behave differently and start acting rationally on these issues. And so I have a hard time believing that they're actually going to start doing that. So I'm very curious to see how they end up handling this, because I think you're right. I think they don't want to have to face another shutdown, because it didn't go well for them. But I also don't know what that means for how they've been acting as of late.
Well, and that's a fair point, because rational and Democrats are two words that are hard to line up together.
True story.
You look at that historic tax cut that the Republicans passed last year without a single Democrat vote in the House or Senate, and see what it's done for working families in Minnesota and Ohio, where I live. And it's been tremendous. I mean, and notwithstanding the bonuses and the minimum wage increases that companies are doing because of these tax cuts, but just look at the overall economy, and you have to wonder where the Democrats' heads are on this issue when they refuse to give any kind of support to this president or his policies, no matter how good they are for the American people.
You know, stepping back from this current issue for just a moment, I mean, you've got a long history here. I mean, you were campaign manager for Ohio Senator Bob Portman's campaign for the U.S. Senate. Worked with President Bush and Cheney's campaign. We were talking a moment ago. We were reading some of the latest emails of the paramours of Page and Strzok and Obama wanting to know all this information. You look at this FISA memos. I'm just curious to get your perspective on politics right now and what President Donald Trump has had to deal with since arriving in office. It just seems all so unprecedented.
It is. I mean, because remember, the Democrats have been against this president since the election day. I mean, they had the fake recounts that they ran, and then they were trying to hijack the Electoral College, and then we saw 60 of them not show up for the inauguration, and then we see this resistance movement and everything that's going on with this Russia investigation. So the partisanship doesn't surprise me so much. Well, one of the things that really surprises me is you look at this special counsel and this overall investigation, even prior to the special counsel being named, and four senior FBI officers have been removed from their jobs. You've got this Peter Strzok, who was demoted twice. You have Lisa Page, who was removed from the special counsel's office. You've had Bruce Orr, who was reassigned basically to demotion. And Andrew McCabe, who's taken early retirement. I don't know that in the history of the Bureau that you've ever had a single investigation situation where four senior leadership positions in the FBI have been removed from it. It's astonishing.
Yeah, I don't understand why there's so much. I mean, it's got to be just partisanship. Why there's such an inability to believe that there might be some corruption in a government agency. And that, that there might be individuals in that agency that are using their positions and their powers and the levers of government to cause harm to people that they consider political opponents. I mean, this is not, it's not like this is unheard of. It's not like this has never happened in the past. And the fact that Congress is the one investigating it, I think, allows people to put on their sort of partisan blinders, because obviously Congress is filled with partisans. But people forget Congress is an investigative body. They are the ones that have the oversight over the FBI and the Justice Department in matters like this.
Well, they have an obligation, but I think even more stunning is the obligation of the Fourth Estate, of the mainstream media, that how they are not concerned about a one part political administration investigating the presidential campaign of the other political political party. I mean, that's really, you would think that the threshold for conducting that kind of investigation would be belt and suspenders buttoned up. But the way this thing is coming out from all these texts and things we see is that there is a real problem with some of the leadership over there in the previous administration, and there needs to be some accountability for it. And it isn't a partisan issue at this point. It's an issue of trust in our government and trust in the social contract that we as Americans have with the Republic.
Okay, I agree with you. I agree with everything you just said. This isn't, nor should it be, a partisan issue. But as I was saying, as I said earlier, the fact that it's happening out of Congress, and Congress is filled with partisans, I think allows people to justify it in their own mind and say, well, it's clearly this is a partisan issue. You got Republicans who are blasting the FBI, and that's just terrible. How dare they do that? How do we get past that? Like, how do you get to the point where even those people that want to look at this through a partisan lens and want to be able to just say, it's just those stupid Republicans and they're just trying to cover up for their buddy Trump. I mean, What's it going to take to get them to realize there was legitimate and serious wrongdoing within the FBI here that needs some accountability in some circumstances?
Well, I don't know how you get there, because the duplicity on the side of the Democrats is appalling. I mean, think about this. Before the Republican memo came out last week, they were saying you cannot release this memo. They all voted against releasing the memo. They said you cannot do it because it's going to harm national security. The memo comes out, and the first thing they say is there is nothing there in the memo. The memo is worthless. It's not legitimate. I mean, you can't have a conversation with a person that refuses to stick with one, you know, set of principles.
Right.
I mean,
right.
They're so malleable when it comes to the facts and reason and I'm not talking about the rhetorical stuff that gets thrown around in politics. I'm talking about the facts on this. And it's just astonishing that the Democrats can speak out of both sides of their mouths on that. And, you know, so how you overcome that, I don't know. But, but you know, we've got an inspector general that's looking at this. We've got you know, the Congress that's looking at it. I just hope for the sake of the union that people get to the bottom of this, because these are serious questions. Because you can bet that if this were the other way around, were a Republican administration investigating a Democratic political campaign, that they would have a completely different attitude than what they have here.
Well, and I also think it's important to remember, you know, one, just to kind of to double down for a moment on when you were talking about the hypocrisy and with these memos. You had Democrats voting, you had Republicans voting to release the Republican memo, Democrats voting against it, but now you have Democrats and Republicans that were both voting to release the Democrat memo. So just to point that out. But when you mentioned it's hard to go and sort of push back and not remember your exact words, but we were talking about it throughout the show this morning. It's hard to push back when you've got an opposition that's willing to be so irrational. The only thing you can do is to do the right thing on your end, and also remember that when it comes to all these things, and I have to remind myself this, Bob, and that is these things take time. You know, we've seen a quick removal of a lot of these individuals in the FBI. You know, a lot of us want to see sort of justice take place when that memo came out on Friday and seeing what was involved in it and what was actually happening. You want to see some immediate accountability. Truth is, it's Washington, it's government, and regardless of what facet you're looking at, these things just take time.
Agreed. And I think we can be patient with it. It as you said, it's difficult, but I think that's the only course of action we have on it.
Bob Paduchik, RNC co-chair, thank you so much for giving us some time this morning. Always a pleasure to have you on. We look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Great. Thank you all. We look forward to being back on again.
Take care.
Take care.
You want to wrap up on one more ridiculous note?
Why not? It's been a
boring, right. Ridiculousness.
Utter ridiculousness.
Well, okay, look, we can do one of two things. Okay, you choose your own adventure, okay? We can either talk about the Eagles fan that flew home with the swipe stadium seat, or we can talk about how Duluth is dropping two American novels
promoting the Duluth story.
All right, so let's do that.
Out
of Duluth, the novels To Kill a Mockingbird and The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn will no longer be required reading in the Duluth School District due to the book's use of a racial slur, a curriculum change supported by the local NAACP chapter.
So disappointing.
It really is.
Teaching opportunities.
Yeah.
Those are opportunities to have genuine conversations, genuine learning moments for kids about how different the world was then, what was accepted then as opposed to what isn't now. I mean, there's valuable lessons to be learned there, but they would rather just ignore them.
And what is so dangerous about this is that they're going to be available in school libraries, right? They can still be optional reading for students beginning next year. However, they'll be replaced as required reading by other literature that addresses the same topics in the 9th or 11th grade English classes. What makes this so dangerous, though, okay, is that the NAACP and those that wanted to see this change can chalk this up as a win.
Of course.
And what they do is they grab it. Okay, they can argue, because people will argue in support of it that may not even like it and go, well, it's just not required reading. They're not taking it out of the libraries. They'll still be available, but we'll use it because it's relevant. This is the slippery slope. They get this, and then they just begin to chip away and chip away and chip away. And it ends up becoming censorship in a certain way.
You're right. You're right. And that is concerning. What concerns me more is this reinforces this idea that we've been talking about throughout the course of this morning. It reinforces this idea in these kids' minds that exposure to words hurts.
Yeah.
That just simply exposing them to the existence of a word causes them harm. It's telling them, because kids are malleable creatures, and they're learning from the adults around them. And when the adults around them are saying, you shouldn't read this book because it's got some words in it that are going to marginalize you, that are going to make you feel like less of a person, that are going to cause you harm. The kid's going to go, okay, that's what my teacher said. That's what my parents said. That's what the adult said. It must be true. They trust them. It doesn't afford them the opportunity to be exposed to this word and be able to say, yeah, that didn't hurt me at all. There was a different time back then. Things were considered acceptable then that aren't now. We're better now. We've come a long way. We live in an amazing country, an amazing world, and I can overcome anything and be whoever and whatever I want to be, even if there are people out there that feel that way. You're taking away that learning opportunity by just removing it altogether and telling them, you shouldn't read this book. It's going to hurt you.
And it could potentially open them up to such good conversation.
Oh, absolutely. It was just a few years ago when we were talking about the ridiculousness of trigger phrases and safe spaces, right? It was just, 5 years ago. We'll just say that. I remember having conversations with it, doing talk radio on the air, talking about these issues on college campuses and how dangerous this was. And I really do. I hate the fact that we're getting vindicated in our commentary that took place years ago, because what you see now taking place in the real world is a direct result of those kids that went to college, were given safe spaces, told them that words can hurt them, who are now out in the real world getting involved in other commentary, and now you see the effects of this. You see how they're reacting.
Duluth School District is doing an absolute disservice to their students here. Bob in St. Paul, good morning. Go ahead. Bob.
Hello, am I on?
Yep.
Yeah, one of the things they never look for is they never look at the character of these people. I mean, Jim and Huckleberry Finn is a very strong character.
Right. Oh, that doesn't matter. It's just the word.
Bring that up.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Right. Context doesn't matter.
Of the person.
Right.
Yep. Well, that would require actually teaching these kids something, and apparently that's they're too lazy to actually do that. Joe in Minneapolis, go ahead.
Thanks. Say, what has obviously gone on here in the last several decades is really, the reason why we have snowflakes is because our education system debilitated our children, and we've allowed this to happen. It's like the scene out of the Titans with Denzel Washington when he talks about what's going on with some of the players, and he looks at the other coach and he says, "Stop it! You're crippling them," and that's what we're doing in our education system, and it's by design. Our education system is very much influenced by a global agenda. The more inability our children have to think critically, the more it serves a larger need, and that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah. We're doing there's a generation out there right now that's becoming very vocal and active that the school system, the university and public school system, has completely done them a total disservice.
Yep, this has been going on for a long time. Stephen Witherspoon, president of the NAACP's local chapter up in Duluth, says that these books use hurtful language that has oppressed the people for over 200 years. No. Language yeah. doesn't oppress you. Power oppresses you.
Yeah.
And now you're using that power to shut down educational opportunities.
Yeah. Stephen Witherspoon, president of the NAACP's local chapter, applauded the school district decision to stop requiring students to read the books. Yes. Applaud irrational behavior. Yes. Yes. Please. Yes. By all means, applaud it. Unbelievable.
To Kill a Mockingbird is, that should be required reading.
Yeah.
Of all the...
I know.
Unbelievable.
Sorry.
No, I don't have to go to the schools.
I know. True story.
Go read that this weekend, maybe.
Me too.
That's totally not going to happen.
Yeah, no.
Is there a movie for that?
Yeah, no, nobody believed that for a second.
Is there a Blu-ray of it?
Can I go buy a Blu-ray?
There is, right?
Tomorrow on the show, we'll tell you about the those Eagles fans that stole some seeds out of U.S. Bank Stadium. And Minneapolis is going to fine you if you have too many cars.
Huh? True story.
Yeah.
In your driveway.
Pretty ridiculous.
That's right.
Have a good day, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye. I don't give me generation. Give me true communication.
I'm Chris Addison. Here's